Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, brought to you by the DeSai Group. The DeSai Group, getting the real work of innovation done. Visit them on the web at DeSai.com, DeSai.com. The High Velocity Radio Show is where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. Produced and directed by Lee Cantor and brought to you live from the Radio X studio in Atlanta, Georgia. Now here's your host, Stone Payton.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, everyone. This is Stone Payton, and I'm joined in the studio with my co-host, Todd Schnick. How's it going, Todd?
I'm doing well, Stone. How are you?
I'm doing well. Hey, catch us up on the Summer X Wars. What's happening with the Radio X Summer X Wars?
Oh, you know, I spent the weekend quietly and methodically campaigning, plotting, planning, pushing our campaign commercial, which, by the way, is starting to get some traffic on YouTube.
I saw that.
But on the true method to my madness, I'm trying to stir up a hornet's nest here. I'm trying to anger our opponents, because I figure the more vicious and more competitive a campaign, the better we're going to do in raising money for our charity, which I hope will be the big winner on Thursday. And that's the Furniture Bank of Metro Atlanta. So we're really excited about that. And judging by some of the attacks I'm receiving on Twitter, I think my strategy is working.
Yeah, I would say so. We're going to have a lot of fun that night. Lee, I think that's Thursday night, August 13th?
Yes, it is.
All right. At
Inside Designs.
Like in Ashford Crossing area, something like that?
Across from Perimeter Mall in this shopping center with the Super Target, Boneheads, Outback, Mimi's Cafe.
Can you be more descriptive?
I'm trying to.
So what time do we get this puppy off the ground?
It starts at 5:30, goes until it ends.
All right. Right?
You know, you late night tweeters.
It goes until I buy enough votes to win.
Right, and it's a buck a vote. You can vote as much as many times as you want, and all the money is going to the furniture bank to buy beds for kids and families that really need it, right?
That's absolutely what Todd says.
That's Todd's story, and he's sticking to it.
As far as you know, Stone, yes.
Well, we have a marvelous show for you this morning. We have three people in the studio. We are just jam-packed here. First on up here in a little bit, we're going to have CEO of Team Doctors Preferred Access, Grant Carter. And then after that, we're going to talk to successful entrepreneur and author Marna Friedman. And then we're going to wrap the show with brand therapist David Cohen. But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show this morning is a gentleman who is the CEO of Team Doctors Preferred Access. His name is Grant Carter. Please join me in welcoming him to the show. Welcome to the show, Grant.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
We are delighted to have you on the show. Tell us a little bit about your business and what you're out there doing for people.
Well, Team Doctors Preferred Access is a solution to effectively combat the state of the union out there in healthcare, which we all know is not exactly improving or getting better by the day. But we are a membership-based model that allows people to buy into a network of what we feel is some of the most superior healthcare providers in North America. Our network is comprised of the lead doctors, orthopedic surgeons, and specialists that are all directly aligned with the professional sports franchises across North America. And so certainly they are the pick of the litter and the cream of the crop. Every day they're already entrusted with, you know, ensuring the health and well-being of the professional athletes and entertainers that they would take care of. We now provide access to these same providers to business owners, executives, managers, sales, oriented people, anybody that truly is a little disenchanted with the options of the local emergency room, if you will. We can provide, you know, direct access to them and provide care in an expedited manner.
How's that for a target market? People that are disenchanted with the healthcare side.
It's called the United States of America, I
yeah,
think.
No kidding. Well, I like it. I really do. I've been enamored with this concept the very moment I was introduced to it. How did you get a team of doctors like this assembled?
Well, for us, we sort of built our business from the inside out, and that is our business was actually created by the doctors. This, you know, elite group of doctors and specialists, it's a fraternity, as you would well expect. For 30 years plus, these doctors have been referring each other clients, you know, leaning on one another for specialties and expertise. Behind closed doors have been, you know, prioritizing, I guess, these clients and other friends for one another for a very long time. And being in the business, they certainly feel the pressure and some of the things that are happening out there in the landscape of healthcare. And so about 3 years ago, they came together, a group of about 8 or 10 of them, and said, listen, you know, we enjoy doing what we do. We really enjoy putting our hands and our expertise on our patients. We also enjoy using our leverage and our influence in the medical arena for the benefit of discerning clients, you know, clients that really appreciate the fact that they've got one of the best working on them. And so why don't we make this available to a far broader group of people. And so for people that would be willing to prioritize and invest, I guess, into having access to them, they formalize themselves. And so we're a privately held company in that sense. We're owned and run, if you will, by the doctors. Huh. And so for us, the challenge was not getting the care providers. You know, our challenge, and you know, we'll listen to David here in a while as the brand expert, but, you know, our challenge is to spread our message and let people know that there's an option out there, and I think a remarkable one, very affordable as well, to combat, you know, sort of the unfortunate state of the union and give you a better choice.
And so it's membership-based. How does the membership work?
Well, a membership is an annual membership fee of $2,000. So, you know, if you think about who you're getting access to, truly these are the same doctors that are treating the likes of Kobe Bryant and LeBron James and A-Rod and Chipper Jones and everyone else. So for $2,000 a year, you effectively have direct and immediate access to this network 24/7, 365 days a year. You have an access card or a membership card that has a number on the back of it that you can call, you know, at any moment of crisis, if you will. And from that, our advocate network contacts you directly, and they go to work behind the scenes to have you seen our doctors as quickly as possible. And so it's really a peace of mind solution. We watch it work every single day, and certainly in those moments of crisis, you know, when you're either considering having to go to the emergency room or going to have a sick appointment with your pediatrician or whatever it is, we provide you a better and more direct option. But equal to that is that for membership, you're going to receive a lot of proactive and preventative care and relationship with the advocate network. Whereas every 2 to 3 weeks, our advocates are reaching out to our members and just touching them and just saying, hey, what's going on in your life? What is happening today that maybe wasn't 3 weeks ago? Well, who else can we be introducing you to or leveraging our influence to, i.e. physical therapists, i.e. fitness and health and wellness, dietitians. Sometimes it's chiropractic. Maybe it's mental wellness if you're going through a grieving period of losing someone and you just need somebody to talk to. Well, we want to be taking on the burden of proactively finding those solutions for you, and all the way down to the basics, which are the things that we all stuff in the drawer, which is making sure you get your annual physical, making sure you get your, you know, your mammogram and your women's care checkups and your athlete physicals for your kids before the day before practice and you realize you've forgotten to do it. You know, we take on the burden of making sure that our members are getting those things done on a proactive basis.
How does the membership work with people's current coverage?
Well, that's the beauty of it. You bring your insurance with you, okay? So whether you have current health insurance either privately or through an employer, when you come to see any of our doctors or any specialist that our doctor network would send you to on a prioritized manner, you're going to run it through your standard insurance like you would. So, you know, we create, you know, our members are coast to coast. We have doctor network coast to coast. So typically what we'll do is anchor a member on a general sense with a local team doctor. So typically their insurance is going to be in-network and it's going to have no challenges. There are going to be occasions sometimes where if we make a specialist referral, it's going to create an out-of-network issue, but we try to navigate and minimize that burden. A good example of how that may work, Todd, would be this, is that let's say you need to have a shoulder surgery and it's been identified and you say, I want the best of the best. Well, you know, we can put you in the hands of arguably the most renowned shoulder surgeons in the country and probably do it within a week. Now, he may be out of your network, but we can also say, hey, if you're here in Atlanta, we can also put you in front of the team doctor for the Atlanta Falcons who could also perform your surgery at exceptional level, and he is in your network. So which one do you want? You tell us, but either way, we're going to have you in there end of this week, if you will, as a case example. So that's the beauty of it, is that, you know, we are a membership that provides access and treatment. And we layer over your healthcare insurance, and we just make sure that, you know, instead of having to wait, you know, 9 hours in an emergency room or 6 to 8 weeks for a specialist visit, we're going to make sure you have those things today or tomorrow.
It's a fascinating idea here. I mean, it's so innovative. But I'm sure you guys are monitoring the national conversation occurring in Washington about the healthcare. Does anything that's being discussed in Washington right now have an impact on what you guys are setting up?
Well, I guess the honest answer is to be determined.
You know, right.
We'll really see how it all maps out, because what is today will probably be different by Friday anyway, right? But, you know, certainly it is enabling us in the sense that, you know, if even in a general idea, things go the way they look like they're going, and the floodgates, if you will, may be opened to, you know, the buzzwords like socialized healthcare or nationalized healthcare, you know, that in and of itself is going to create, you know, an enormous amount of utilization, if you will, of the healthcare system that isn't being even today. And we already know that today's the systems that is being strained. So I guess sort of superior or higher level options like ours are going to be more attractive. And we're hearing that and feeling that every day from conversations that we're having, should things go that direction from an administration standpoint. And we feel as a business, it could be something that helps our business grow, or at least gives us the opportunity to deliver our business to more people.
I'm thinking the timing of what you are launching and what's happening in Washington is actually a good thing for you. I mean, that's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, us too. I mean, we think so. And time will tell, but we're already receiving a lot of feedback, and we're receiving more calls and more interest in our model, I think, just because people are so in tune with what's going on. And the proactive types, they're sensing where it's going, they're wanting to be proactive, and they're contacting us ahead of time as sort of an anticipatory move, if you will, and we're glad to have them.
Marna, when you met Grant in the lobby a little earlier, you seemed to really resonate with this idea. You had a personal experience that really brought the need for this to life for you, didn't you?
Yes. I brought my mother up from Florida. She needed hip replacement surgery and had put it on hold for a very long time. And we had picked the doctor that we wanted based on a lot of information that we had heard. And he expedited her date, but we still waited 3 months for her to have surgery. And unfortunately, when you wait to have a medical condition addressed, the longer you wait, the worse it gets. So had I known about something like Team Doctors, it would have been wonderful because you could have expedited it. And I spent hours doing research, trying to find a doctor and trying to get all of the answers to my questions. And to have had an advocate would have been great.
Well, Marna, thank you. I mean, it really is a case example of why we are here and why we deliver the service that we do every day. You highlight the two key points of any target, I guess, member or target family for us. One is time, okay? I mean, time for everybody is far and away our most precious asset. And so the time you spent doing the due diligence, doing the homework, trying to find the best of the best, first and foremost, then the time spent waiting. We conquer that first and foremost. Number two is, you represent a want or a need to have a better level of care. It was critically important to you. This was your mother. You wanted her in the hands of the best. Just the run of the mill was not going to be enough. So if for people that truly are discerning in that manner and say, listen, I'm willing to spend a little extra money, or I'm willing to wait some extra time to make sure that I'm put in the hands of the best, well, we also conquer that issue as well. So those are really the two criteria, that we feel we satisfy most through Team Doctors. And as you mentioned, Todd, we think a good part of the United States of America represents those traits. So that's why we're excited about what we have and where we are. We would have been pleased to be able to provide that to you, Marna. But it truly does sort of speak to the fact that a lot of people know what they don't want, or the way they don't want it. They don't quite sure know how they want it. They know they want it better. That's a lot of what we take on. We create that option of, we know what you don't, but here's probably what you're looking for, and we can provide that pretty quickly.
So your network of providers is top of the line. It's a who's who. But what if I don't want to use the Falcons doctor? Can you score me the Chicago Bears team doctor?
We can.
Okay, outstanding.
Yeah, absolutely. if your team allegiance is elsewhere, we can make that happen for you for sure. Yeah. We don't cover the plane trip, but other than that, you know.
Understood.
Tell us about the Team Doctors Blessings Network.
The Blessings Network is something we're very proud of and very excited about. We feel as part of what we do for our members every day is help and heal and give back. And in today's world, I think everybody's struggling. And we've been blessed to have a thriving business and one that, hopefully will be around for a long time. And so the Blessings Network is built off this premise. We want to partner actively with foundations and charities who, are constantly out asking for help, asking for donations, asking for monetary support to build their foundations and their causes. Very very seldom do they actually ever to give anything to their donors or the people that are supporting them so often. So what we're aiming to do and what we are doing is partnering with these foundations and nonprofits to say, hey, listen, offer Team Doctors as a solution to your donors and to the people who supported your cause.
Nice.
As a sort of a give back or something that they can introduce them to. Very non-solicitous in that manner, but truly just, hey, we believe in this group and we like what they're doing. If you're interested, please contact them. And at Team Doctors, we've agreed that 10% of any new membership that comes from those introductions will go right back to the cause. And that's on an annual basis. So, continually as those members would renew their memberships annually, we continue to send that back to the charity. So we're helping to promote their cause. We're helping to hopefully give them a chance to give back, you know, which is something they don't get to do a lot. And certainly we're helping create a revenue stream that's probably much needed for those organizations. And you know, also we think it reflects very well on our brand, if you will, that we're taking an initiative to do that.
Go ahead.
Giving back is I've always believed, is tremendous marketing. So kudos to you on that.
Thanks.
This really is exciting to me. How can our listeners get more information about Team Doctors? Tell us about a website, contact information.
Well, I'll give you all that. The website is very simple. It's www.theteamdoctors.com. So www.theteamdoctors.com. You can also email us for more information at info@theteamdoctors.com. A phone number, if you'd like to contact us, is 678-775-6787. And again, we would, you know, welcome the opportunity to go into detail with anybody that would be interested. And everybody's circumstances are different. We understand that. But, you know, we're proud of what we do. We've seen a lot of reward come back to us every single day with watching our members benefit from it.
Before we let you go, Grant, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show. I hope you got a little bit of a heads up on it. But we like to ask each of our guests, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career, and really more importantly, what they've learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
Well, absolutely. And I think it's a great thing that you're doing here, because everybody should learn from it. For me, it seems a little generalistic, but the one mistake I think I've made in business in the past is being overly assumptive. You know, you go in assuming some various, what you think are just the most obvious of attributes or facts around your business or about your clients, like why are they interested in you or why they're interested in your business. And you don't question those assumptions. You just sort of go in there thinking you know it all, or at least you know some of it. And, you know, if ever you're challenged, which I have done in the past, to step back and really analyze those assumptions, you come to realize you're way off. You're just really way off. And some of those most basic of things, if you would have looked at them earlier or with more scrutiny, you would have learned a lot, A, about yourself, about your business, and about the way you're positioning your product or service to your marketplace, and probably saved yourself a lot of those meetings like, what are we doing wrong, or why can't we seem to stimulate action or whatever. So, you know, in my past, what I did is truly do, so we've gone back, sort of stripped away all the ego in the people in the room or the leadership of a business, and say, you know, get out of your own way, admit to yourself you don't know everything, and start to really challenge some of those basic assumptions, because odds are you're going to poke holes in them, and you should make some ready-made corrections and move forward, and it's paid dividends in the past. So, you know, now as a businessman, that's what I like to do, and I think it's served us well. So hopefully for others, they can kind of maybe take that and work with it, go back, challenge the basics of their business a little bit, and see if it can make some improvements.
Well, that sounds like terrific advice to me. Just a little energy invested up front can save you an awful lot of heartache when it comes to assumptions, can't it?
No question.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show, Grant. Can you hang out with us for a little while we interview our other two guests?
It would be my pleasure. Look forward to it.
Terrific. Well, next up on the High Velocity Radio Show, I am delighted to introduce to you a lady that I met just a few days ago at one of these, what do you call them, Todd? Tweet-ups? Okay. Her name is Marna Friedman. She's a successful entrepreneur and business book author, and getting ready to release her second business book. Welcome to the show, Marna.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about the first book that you wrote, why you're writing the second book, and we'd love to hear more about your business in general.
The first book I wrote the first book that you know about, because the first book I wrote was actually on event planning, but the book that we're talking about, The Small Business That Could, actually happened as a result of constantly answering questions. Based on Grant's comment about assumptions, a lot of people go into business, especially right now, people go into business and they make a lot of assumptions that they have all of the answers and they know what they need. And then they start looking and they start searching for things and they start reading books and they start getting a lot of information, and they get information, but they don't know what to do with it once they get it. They don't know where to go to get the tools to execute what they've learned. And so one of the things that I did as I was helping a few different people out that were starting their own business was started looking for websites that they could go to get the information, and realized that there were all of these amazing websites out there that there was no book that was kind of like the encyclopedia of websites for business owners of where to get the help that you need, and started drafting what all of those websites were, and it evolved into a little handbook. And one of the things that I was very specific about when I started writing my book was we all go to these websites and we write down our on a little post-it note the password and the all the login stuff that we log in with. And we go in and we find it, and we're like, this is really great. And we have that little post-it on our computer. And then we leave, and we come back, and we clean our office, and we take all those little post-its, and we don't know what they're from, and we throw them away. And then we go back to the website, and we're like, how did I log into that website? I don't remember the password.
It just happened to me.
And so what I did when I created my book was I created it in such a way so that every page is a website, and it tells you a little bit. It gives you the URL, and it tells you about the website, basically, in their words, what it is that they're offering. And then it gives you a space to write down your user information and your ID. And I also tell people, don't ever write your password down in anything. Your password should always be a code that you'll remember. So if your cat's name is Fluffy and it's 2009, you know, write down F2009. So you know that it's Fluffy and it's 2009, but nobody else knows what the F stands for. So if anybody ever picks up your book, they're not going to know what your password
is. That's an incredible coincidence. I just wrote down F2009 just not 2 weeks ago, but I'm in a much better mood now. Business is good. So I'm interested to know, because so many people that I meet say they want to write a book, or, you know, I'm working on a book, or, you know, or they'll come to me because I wrote the one book. How do you get mobilized to actually get a book together, written, and published? What's the secret to that?
Discipline.
That's why I've only written one, right?
There you have it. That's why I haven't written any.
It's really, I had the benefit of knowing publication design and layout, knowing graphic design from a previous experience. So for me, I actually did my design work and wrote the book while I was designing it and laying it out. So
you created your own company, right? Your own publishing company?
I did. I created my own publishing company. I published my own book. And
why did you do that?
It was faster. I think that the problem is that a lot of the things that are going on, a lot of the things that are needed right now. And when you go through a lot of those traditional publishing routes, till you get a publisher to agree to publish your book, and then the publisher takes it through all of the steps, you're looking at probably about a year, six months to a year at least, before that book hits the market. And unfortunately, 6 months right now is way too long for people to have to wait for the information that they need. There's a lot of books out there that tell you how to go into your own business and all of the steps that you need to take, but they don't tell you where to go once you have the information on how. And what people need more than the basic how-to is, okay, now you told me how to do it, now where do I go to get it done? I had somebody call me the other day, and she wanted to know how. She knew she had to do it, but she wanted to know, where does she go to register her business? And it seems like something very basic, but not everybody knows how to do that. And you've got a lot of people out there right now that are, you know, listening to everybody else and forming their own companies and trying to get businesses off the ground, but they don't know the basics. And then once they do know the basics and somebody says to them, okay, you need to register this, you need to do this, and you need to do this, okay, but where do I go to do that? And that's what I wanted to have in my book, was not just how to do something, but more, okay, where do I go? Where do I go to get it done? Tell me the fast step, you know, the shortcuts. And that's kind of what I was looking at.
I think it's a great tool, because so many people who are creative minds have a skill set, and they believe that because of their talent at that skill, they can form a business around that. They don't realize that they actually have to run a business. So anything that's done like that to help them think through the little details, because the little details can also kill you. So that's great.
Do you have anybody in particular in mind when you're describing that person?
Absolutely not.
I told Grant when we were in the lobby a little earlier, if it wasn't for Todd, our business would have a magnetic sign on a pickup truck. But because of Todd, we got websites and this Twitter thing and LinkedIn and the whole bit. So there is some wisdom in collaborating with people that know what they're doing on some of these fronts as well.
Absolutely. And the thing is that people that are trying to get into their own business today don't understand how easy and accessible a lot of this stuff is. And that becomes a barrier. I mean, I go to a lot of these networking meetings, and you meet a lot of people, and you ask them for their business cards, and how many people don't have websites? And you kind of wonder, you know, when you stand back and you look at a business and you think about the fact that they don't have a website today, and it's kind of like not having an address, you know? it's just a little, it's unusual because there's, you can even have it for free. So it's amazing to me.
I like that, free. Free's always fun.
Free's good.
So tell us about the new book.
The new book is called The Small Business That Could for Women. And it has over 800 websites in it. It lists a lot of the organizations that are out there that are specific for women. And they, funding sources that are there for women, networks that are there for women, a lot of work at home information. It goes into a state by state directory of different associations that are out there that are just for women, and so that women can then network with. And then it also includes a lot of generic websites and general help information for women as they're starting their own business and places that they can go. Different hosting companies that they can go to, different reasons why they, you know, how they can sell their products, different ways to get their products online, all of the different steps that they need to get their products online, and different details, places, you know, that will help them and that are geared towards helping women in business, because that seems to be a kind of a missed opportunity, I guess, from a lot of people. So that was where this came from. And one of the things that I've learned since I formed my company is that once you start going to a lot of these networking events, you find out about other networks that you don't necessarily know about. And so what happens is that people go to, like, the Chamber of Commerce and the standbys, the company, you know, the places that we all go to for networking, and they don't know about all of these other networks that are out there that are wonderful. You know, people not being on Twitter. People not being on LinkedIn, people, you know, not being on Facebook, and understanding how social media and all of those other things can help a business be successful.
I'm sure it won't be long before you're on Oprah promoting this, but how are you promoting this book right now? Are you using things like social media, I'm assuming?
I am using things like social media. The book is actually in the final proof stages. I'm hoping to get the final proof today. And once the final proof is signed off on, it will be immediately available as an ebook on Amazon.com, and then it will be available as a paperback on Amazon.com probably in about 3 weeks. And then I'm doing a lot of speaking engagements at networking associations, some of them geared towards women, and talking about how the book can help women and give them the resources that they need quickly to access those things that they need.
You're a successful entrepreneur. Your books are selling well. You've hit the big time. You're on the High Velocity Radio Show. But it wasn't overnight. How did you get here? From whence do you come, Miss Marna?
I used to have my own business in New York and relocated to Florida and ended up in corporate. And after a very long time in corporate, relocated to Atlanta, stayed in corporate, and then all of a sudden realized that this wasn't what I wanted, that my passion was really being an entrepreneur and doing things and helping other people. And when you work in corporate, you have a very limited amount of things that you can do and people that you can help and skills that you can utilize. And when you're an entrepreneur, you can be, that becomes much broader. You can do a lot more things and offer a lot more services. And so that was really what I wanted to do. I love to teach people. I have a passion for training people how to do the things that they need to do. And so I decided that that was what I really wanted to do. And the book happened as a result of that.
And you're a big believer in this idea of pay it forward. What role has that played in your success?
It's paid a tremendous amount. A lot of people have been very, very helpful to me and have opened up doors for me, even way back in the beginning of my career as an entrepreneur. And so I firmly believe that we all have to help each other out and pay it forward and teach each other the things. I think we all have to make a living, obviously, but you can't be afraid to share the information. You can't be afraid to, you know, when somebody says something to you and they say, you know, like the other night at the tweet up, you know, somebody was having conversation with me and I knew that there was a better way to do something that they were doing. And I said, you need to look at this. And I followed up with it with an email to them and helped give them the advice that I had spent hours learning how to do and researching. And I think that if we all do that, if we all help each other out and we all explain the things that each one of us doesn't necessarily know, that we are paying it forward. We're helping each other out. And we're helping businesses be more successful, and we're helping other people get up off, you know, get their businesses off the ground, kind of like what David does and what Grant does and, you know, what you guys do. I mean, and I think that that's really important. I think that we all, I don't think that you can stand back and close your mind off to helping other people and being open to what other people do. It's just my strong belief.
Well, it's what Grant says. You just can't assume. And people need help. If your mentality is service first and selling second, you're going to be very successful. I do believe in that you rack up karmic points, and as you give, you get. So kudos to you on that, too.
Well, and it's fun. It's fun to reach out and help people. It really is. It enamors you with them, and then they turn around and help you. It's just it's a lot of fun.
Because the business opportunities come, and you do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Time. So how can our listeners get in touch with you? Tell them a little bit about Impressive Solutions and how they can contact you and get a little help on that front as well.
Okay, I have a company called Impressive Solutions. It starts with an M, not an I. And the website is ImpressiveSolutions.com, and I offer professional organizing for small businesses through that company and virtual assistants, so that it offers them like executive assistant services, basically the things that they would have to hire somebody for but really don't have enough work to want to hire somebody full-time. You only pay for the services that you need. And they can contact me through that website at Marna@ImpressiveSolutions.com. And then the Small Business That Could also has its own website, and that's also Marna@SmallBusinessThatCould.com. And they can call me at 678-920-3099.
So between now and the Oprah show, we can access the book on the websites, or we'll get something posted on the High Velocity Radio site as well.
Absolutely.
People can get to your books. Well, it has been wonderful having you on. I love hearing about the way that you go to market, and I just I identify so much, and I know Todd does and everyone in this studio, with this whole idea of pay it forward. Before we let you go, you heard us put Grant on the hot seat just a little while ago. Wonder if you would do the same thing for us, Marna, and share a mistake that you've made at some point in your career and what you've learned from it.
I think one of the biggest mistakes I made was leaving entrepreneurship and going back into corporate. But I think that one of the things that it does is that you need to look at everything as a lesson and see what you can get out of everything and use it as you move forward. I think that had I not gone back into corporate and seen all of the opportunities and things that go on in the corporate world, I wouldn't be able to do all of the things that I do as an entrepreneur. So I think you have to look at things and, you know, not look at lemons, but look at lemonade, and make everything an opportunity and try and have a positive attitude.
And it's not always easy to do that.
No.
So how do you keep yourself up? How do you stay positive?
I surround myself with really positive people.
You hang out with people like Dave and
I
Grant
do.
And Stone, right?
I do. I think that that's the thing you need to do. And you just, you have to always look at it, you know, okay, yesterday's over. And, you know, perfect example. I sent an email the other night. Somebody sent me an email, and I responded because it was somebody I wanted to get in touch with. And I'm usually really, really good about making sure that I send it. And it was a reply to all. And fortunately, it didn't say things that it shouldn't say. But I got the email back. And I thought, why did I get this email back? And realized it was a reply to all. And, you know, after I got over my, you know, red moment of being so totally mortified, I laughed. You know, it was an honest mistake. It wasn't something that was going to end the world. And, you know, it happens. And I think that that's the thing you have to realize. I mean, you're not, you know, you don't do things, as long as you're not doing something maliciously and you're not hurting somebody, you've got to be able to laugh it off and move on and just be able to laugh. If you can't laugh at yourself, then you need to take a step back.
But it's great advice, because you are the average of the people you spend the most time with. That's why Stone spends so much time with me.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. You're going to hang with us while we interview our next guy. Very interesting guy. He's a brand therapist. So next up, and actually driving things home for us in this broadcast, is a brand therapist. His name is David Cohen. Please welcome him to the show. Welcome to the show, David.
How you doing?
I am doing well, man. So tell us, what's a brand therapist? What are you out there doing for folks? And what kind of advice do we all need?
Well, okay, that's a big set of questions, but what's a brand therapist? That's a term that came from one of my customers. Basically, I was helping him understand some things about his business, and I guess my approach sometimes gets into some broad and deep-reaching questions, because I really try to understand at a deep level what a business is all about, what an individual driving a business is all about. And he interrupted me midstream and said, "You know what you are, David? You are a brand therapist." And I said, "Oh, I've got to put that on my card." So that's where that came from. What do we all need? Was that the other part of the question?
Yeah, tell us, what do we need? You know, wow. Most of us are small business people in this studio, and sometimes we service large business. But what do we need? How do we put a branding package together? Lay it on us, doctor.
Okay. Well, I think number one, what you all need is to come and visit High Velocity Radio. You know, make that part of your checklist.
Well said. Well said.
But I think number one thing that businesses need to do and recognize is that they are now in a world where search and the internet have changed a lot of the dynamics. And a lot of things that worked in the past, the games have been changed. A lot of the assumptions that you would carry into a meeting, just like Myrna said, it's now surprising if someone doesn't have a website. That's a change of expectation. That's only going to get more so. It's going to get more and more surprising if you as an individual don't have a LinkedIn profile or a website of your own or both. Because we are being taught every day to search. We are being taught every day that what we want to find is findable. And that's a whole new world. One of the things I like to talk about with folks is we probably all have had the experience of shopping on Amazon. You know, it's the most mm-hmm. popular place in the world. You know, there's some good books out there, I hear. But when we go and we search for an item on Amazon, look at the information that we are getting. You know, we may be making a $10 purchase. We may be buying a coffee mug. We might be buying, you know, a hot new paperback that can help your business. But what are we also looking at? We're looking at the reviews. We're looking at the complimentary products. You might be getting some bookends that go really well with that book, or we might be getting, you know, other people who looked at this book also were interested in these other books, or here's some other books by that author. And all these unsolicited reviews and lists and things. And if you imagine, you know, 15, 20 years ago, what you would have had to pay to gather all that information so that you can make a $10 purchase decision or a $15 or $20 yeah. purchase decision, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of information. We get that for free. And more importantly, we now expect it. And that is retraining behaviors. Those behaviors now slip into the next purchase decision we make, whether that purchase decision is a consumer product or a service or deciding what doctor we buy. We now expect more information, and we expect it to be findable. So that's one of the main things I would say to every business. Understand you're in that world now.
Well, I want to hop on the branding couch for a moment okay. here, Doc. So I've got a cool name, right? Stone Payton. I've got the High Velocity Radio Show. I have this company called Market Mate. Thanks to mm-hmm. Todd, we have the High Velocity blog. One of the questions that comes up for me is, okay, in going out to the market, do I try to brand Stone Payton? Do I try to brand this whole idea of high velocity and speed and try to leverage from on the book that I wrote a few years ago? Where do you target your effort, particularly for small business people? Do they brand themselves, or do they brand the company, or something else?
Well, I think it depends a bit on their objectives for the company and some of the segments they're trying to reach. For instance, if you are looking to go down the road of being a speaker and author, you may find more value in branding yourself, since that is what you're going to be identified with. If your target is more, let me build up a business so I can exit that business and have something to sell, then branding all around your name might become an impediment. So you have to understand what your long-term strategy is. and realized you may need to develop two brands. And
is that allowed? Is that against the rules?
It's not cool? Against the rules. So long as you understand why you're doing it and what your objectives are, so that you may be developing a Stone Peyton Brown Peyton brand around your speaking, around lectures you may give, et cetera, and developing a high velocity brand, perhaps for brand extension into other products and services that you may offer. So, there's such a thing as, I call it the head barber problem. Is the barbershop can't grow because people only want to go to the head barber. For a certain kind of business, it might be tough and limiting if all the attention is on one person because, no one wants to give anyone else a chance. Whereas if you are the product, then definitely you don't want to get in the way of what the customer expectation is. So any branding exercise can't be approached in a one-size-fits-all type manner. You have to look at the context in which you're operating and go from there in terms of figuring out what is going to create a meaningful connection with the segments you're trying to reach and what is going to help you set expectations that you're able to follow through on, because branding is really a cycle. We sometimes at a very surface level think about branding just in terms of the logos and the identifying marks. But really what branding is all about is creating a repeating cycle in which we are trying to set expectations that we are able to fulfill so that we build reputation. And depending on how well we follow through on the expectations we set, that colors the reputation that we build. That colors the buzz that we may create around ourselves, because if you haven't met me yet, what are you going to do? You're going to look me up. That's going to tell you something. You might ask some people who've already met me, hey, do you know David? And depending on what they tell you, that's going to change your expectation coming in. And I'm then either going to have a tougher or easier job meeting those expectations and creating a good experience for you, which should hopefully reinforce the positive expectation, the positive brand building that I'm trying to create.
Todd, you ought to weigh in on this because I know you're working with a lot of small businesses. I know you very successfully helped launch some brands in the restaurant arena. And, of course, as a professional political consultant, there must be some kind of, maybe it's not the term you guys use in that arena, but there must be some kind of branding angle to setting up a profitable, productive political campaign.
Well, and David, pipe in or disagree as you need to, but you don't, the business doesn't necessarily create the brand, if you will. How you perform and how you execute in the marketplace then determines what that brand is.
Completely agree.
It's almost like you're creating a brand, but what's more, there's a difference between what the brand relationship is with your customers. So, but David, you probably find this as often as I do, in that a small business person says, well, I'm just a home-based business, so I don't need a brand.
Right. And what I would say is, first and foremost, you got to understand, you have a brand. I don't care who you are or how big your business is. If you've ever encountered anyone else in this world, if anyone's walked into your store, if anyone's looked at your website, you do have a brand. It may not be a small one, and it may not be the brand you want, but branding happens despite you.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. It's not an option.
It's not an option. And to Todd's point, you do have a role and an opportunity to participate in that, but really all you get to do is suggest. I can make a suggestion about what my brand is all about. I can make a suggestion about the expectations I want you to have. But in the end, it's the customers who decide. And it is the customers who then bring the consequences of that decision. I like to say branding, there are three R's. You have recognition, you have reputation, and you have reaction. Job number one of branding is recognition. If you don't create recognition, then there is nothing for the associations that someone may build upon to latch onto. There's nothing for them to accrete to. Okay? But once we recognize something, once we're able to pick it out of a crowd and see it for what it is, we immediately are encountering associations that we have with that. Those may be built on prior experience. They may be built on hearsay, things we've heard from friends and reputation that way. If we don't have any prior experience and don't have any buzz, we're going to look entirely on surface impressions and say, is that thing shiny and polished the way I would expect it to be? Or is that person fitting the mold and archetype I have in my mind for that concept? So, if I came in here and I told you I sold skateboards, am I dressed in a way that would look like a skateboard salesperson?
As a matter of fact, yes, you are, David.
Today, maybe I am. and likewise, if I told you I was a stock analyst, you'd say, you look a little underdressed today. But, I dressed for radio. At any rate, those expectations are there, and surface impressions fill in the void. And we're always doing this mental calculus. Does this thing agree with what, my preconceptions are, my expectations are? Then, you deliver your service or you put your product out there and people say, it met my expectations or it didn't. And based on that, they're going to have a reaction, and that's the third R.
Well, expand on that. Does social media make that easier or harder?
Yes. I think it does both. Social media, what I said to someone the other day, social media is leverage. It is not magic bullets. So creating a website, getting on Twitter isn't going to instantly, do great things for your business. But it gives you an opportunity to access more people than you can just walking around. It gives you an opportunity to seek out and search your community and look for people who have signaled an interest or signaled in their own communication online that they may be predisposed to be of interest for your brand. So go where people want you is number one. And spend some time doing some research on that. Spend some time understanding the community and the etiquette in those environments. And then look to how they want to communicate. And remember, in every communication, you're there to add value to that community. You're not there to take that community and bring it to you.
I know you do the same. I run across so many small businesses that don't want to make themselves open and vulnerable on social media because they don't want to open themselves up to negative criticism. And I always tell them, that's the best opportunity you can to improve that brand relationship. Because I do marketing for a local restaurant, and we do occasionally have someone that has an unsatisfactory meal. And I love that opportunity because then we can bend over backwards and help and improve that relationship. And then they have a good feeling. They feel good that we bend over backwards to help them. And that makes – I think that has a longer-term positive benefit to establishing a stronger brand relationship than if they just came in and had an average experience and I never knew about it.
Absolutely. Number one – let's go back to that word, despite. If you've got people saying something negative about you, they're going to say that negative thing about you whether you're engaged online or not. So why not be not be in the conversation? Why not have an opportunity to find out what they're saying and offer a response? Moreover, is that an isolated voice, one out of 1,000 that's saying something negative, or is that the chorus? In which case, if everyone's saying something negative, shouldn't you know about that? And shouldn't you take a look at what is, the flaw in what you're doing? Are you creating the wrong impressions, the wrong expectations, or are you simply not delivering on the expectations that you create? This is your opportunity to fix and to cure and to represent. And it's important to remember that expectations can really change the product experience. An example I always like to talk about is, if I were to make a table out of particle board, MDF, go to Home Depot, and here's a great dining room table, really nicely designed. Well, if I put it in, one furniture shop where the expectation is this is heirloom furniture and stuff I'm going to pass on to my kids, well, gee, that table's probably going to make people upset because it's particle board, it's not going to last that long. But if I put it in a different type of store, a certain big box outlet, I won't name who, known for great design, but known more as starter furniture and stuff college kids put in the dorm room and so forth, that same table made exactly the same way might be seen as a great value. So the expectations can really change the product in essence.
Well, we're almost out of time, but before we wrap up, let's get real tactical here for a moment.
Sure.
I've brought you two clients. I've got Grant Carter here, CEO of Team Doctors Preferred Access, and he's trying to reach a certain market with certainly appears to be a very premium service. And then we have Marna here, successful author. She's releasing the second book. She's chosen to target a very specific audience with women. Just a few tips for each, things they ought to keep in mind, some pitfalls maybe they should avoid, just some general tactical advice.
Sure. Well, I think for Marna, the big question is the brand, the small business that could, and expansion on that title, similar to Kiyosaki's Rich Dad brand, do you go line extension that way? Or in moving into this segment, doing a book for women, really the direction you want to go. So first, understanding that choice. And that's going, you really want to create alignment with your marketing and what your overall strategic objectives are. So, that would be the first decision. I think you'd need to go down that road. For the doctor business, I think you sound very well buttoned up. It's a great sounding service, very compelling. So I think it is creating opportunities for the satisfied customers to talk about the experience they're having. And I think that is the next step in the evolution of that brand, is how do I, as someone curious and interested, get in touch with what is this really like in the experience? Because, it sounds good on paper. It's very compelling. But now let's make it a little more real for me. And I think those would be some starting points.
Man, I could talk about this branding stuff all day. But we are just about to run out of time. Before we let you go, you know what's coming. We'd love to hear from you for our Return to Learning segment, David. We'd like for you to share a mistake that you've made at some point in your career and what you've learned from it.
Well, one of the things that comes to mind, and it illustrates a struggle I have. I have both a math and an art background, so it's like I want to be really creative, and I also want the answer to be right. A number of years ago, I had a startup, and we were putting out our first brochure, and we just got crazy trying to make it the absolute perfect brochure, and we were pulling out all the stops and getting friends in the printing business to, do special design work for us and print it. And we printed a ton of these things. And by the time we got that whole exercise done, our product had fundamentally changed and it was all a moot point. And so it was an important lesson that there is a time to prepare and there is a time to move and to act. And it's important in any business. And I think you guys would agree, you got to keep moving. And, a lot of the brand exercise is really about developing trust so that you can move and execute business faster. Back then, it was a decision where we just moved too slow, trying to be too perfect, when we would have been better served getting something out into the market and correcting as we went.
You heard it right here from the brand therapist. Pull the trigger already.
Hey, David, let us know, or let our audience know how they can find you.
Absolutely. Well, I have a website, equationarts.com. And that's really there for all of my business information. You can reach me at 404-492-9818. If you want to get inside my head a little bit, which, approach at your own caution.
There's a risk.
I have a blog, which is davidscohen.wordpress.com. And I'll give you one more address, and that's davidcohen.com if you happen to be curious about any of that artwork. So,
oh, I am curious about the artwork. I don't know how that escaped me. I saw the Equation Arts, the Equation Plus Arts, but I want to look into the artwork as well.
Well, once upon a time, I was a long-haired art teacher, and as those in the studio can see right now, the long hair is long gone.
Well, thanks so much for joining us, David. It has
Pleasure.
Been an absolute delight. Very informative. What a great show. This has been a lot of fun. I've learned a lot. How about you, Ty?
Oh, my gosh, it was a great show. This will go down. And one of the great ones.
I think we're locked for the Summer X Award now, don't you?
It's done.
Until next time, this is Stone Payton and Todd Schnick saying we'll see you in the fast lane.